It's well past midnight, and damned cold on this blasted heath. Where is Homeless? Oh, that hound of the Bakersfield sends chills down me throat.
Excuse me, sir.
What? What's that? Me?
Oh, you gave me a fright.
Here, take two. They're very small.
Thank you.
I, sir, am not but an old blind, crippled shepherd. You'll remember me from a couple of weeks
ago. I remember you
well. And I've lost my way, sir. I was wondering if you might have found it.
No, but here, take your fright back. Boo!
Boo? No, I never touch this stuff. It makes you blind, you know. Could you tell me the way to the City of London, sir?
Thank goodness you're here.
I am.
I'd know that withered limb and glass eye anywhere, Homeless. And you used that crutch in the case of the rubber crutch. It was very funny.
What? Sir, where's London, sir?
Come on now, Homeless. Give me that silly white beard.
No, sir, that's mine.
And that withered limb.
No, sir.
And that black stare.
No, oh, sir, look out. You're pushing me near the heat cliff.
My name isn't Cliff. Sit ye down, Homeless.
My name isn't Homeless.
Oh, over the cliff. Poor old devil. Oh, well. At least I have his beard to keep me hands warm. Oh! Through that rock. Oh, look, there's a note attached. A £5 note. Now I can buy a bigger rock and get a trade in on this one.
Put me down, Doctor!
Is that you, Homeless? Where are you?
I am the rock!
Sure. And I am an island.
Saw you. I just rip off this disguise.
Oh, damn it. Clever, Homeless. I didn't recognize you.
No, you took me for granted.
Now, Beeson, settle down. What did you find out at the British Museum?
My library card has expired. What about you, Homeless?
Batson, this spot is exactly where the moon was last seen. Look what you're standing on.
My feet.
No, you dodo. You're standing on my feet. Now, get off them. Can you see those two parallel tracks?
Homeless, you should be ashamed of yourself.
No, not my arm on the ground.
Oh, the tracks on the ground. Ah, yes. What do you make of them?
Evolutionary, my dear Beeson. They were produced by the parallel wheels of a circa 1890 Sicilian dog cart with brass trimmings and faded roses painted on the sides, loaded to the brim, I would say, with hero sandwiches and pretzels.
Amazing, Homeless. You can tell all that from these tracks alone.
Don't be silly. I was caught in its wheels when I was disguised as a rock. The cart's parked right over there.
What in heaven's name's that? Good. I was getting hungry anyway. Here, Homeless, have a sandwich.
Thank you very much. Pay that Italian dog.
Oh.
And don't throw away that paper the sandwich was wrapped in. It might be a clue. Let me see it. Aha. It's a page from the personal section of Mechanics Illustrated. Read this.
So that meant if we had to go 30 or 40 miles somewhere, I had to listen to this fucking lecture. 30 or 40 miles, and I learned all the secrets that his daughter doesn't know. Now, my big problem about today's presentation, and this was last night's dream, dare I say the things which really would interest them, but boy, they don't really want to hear those things. Or go along with the bullshit about what a great golden icon he was.
First one. The secrets.
Let me tell you. I'm almost done.
Done?
There are only three ways to get your name on a library. When I was marching with Martin Luther King Jr. from Selma, Montgomery, we went across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And I asked everybody around me, and it was all these really heroic, courageous black people, not all of us white fuckers who would come in from Beverly Hills and places like that, who were going to go home and were safe. These people who had to be there the next day when the Klan and all of these fat buttock white motherfuckers came out to burn their houses and kill them. And I said, who the hell is Edmund Pettus? Not one of them knew. And it turned out, after vast research through the Merriam-Webster Who's Who in American Politics, Edmund Pettus was a miserable, parsimonious, pettifogging, little separatist, segregationist bastard who probably should burn in hell forever. And no one knew. So that's one way to get your name on a library. Be a politician with absolutely no ties to anyone who will come thereafter. We'll say, who is Edmund Pettus?
Candy ACDC Fix It Man desires electrical and emotional outlets. No cranks or phonies. Send schematic drawing.
No, give me that.
I don't get it.
Let me read it. Yes, here it is. For sale, slightly damaged Russian, American, and Syrian lunar probes. Many valuable parts, including feet, mirrors, sensors, and solar batteries. Original cost in the millions. Yours for a farthing.
Why, homeless, what can this mean?
Jetsam, the person who wrote this ad has the moon.
Fantastic. But how shall we find him? Oh, I know. You'll probably track him down by such inscrutable clues as the typeface the ad is set in.
Yes, it's Art Nouveau Bodoni. Oh. Only available in northern Scotland. Now, look at this watermark.
Why, it's still wet.
Exactly. Glasgow. By the total absence also of any linen fibers in the paper, it's obviously from the Mumsworth district.
Amazing.
And look at the peculiar irregularities in the spacings of these letters, you see, huh? Quite obviously, the typesetter's table was tilted.
Sonny Good Street.
Exactly. And due to the misspelling of the word walrus, the man who wrote this probably lives in the third house from the bottom of the hill.
Unbelievable. And his name, homeless?
Elementary, Batson. George Mumsy.
Homeless, you're incredible. How do you do it? How can you possibly deduce
There's
that?
Nothing to it. It's here in black and white at the bottom of the ad. George Mumsy, number 3, Sunny Good Street, Mumsworth, Glasgow, Nova Scotland. Aha! Page 41! Now, into the dog cart, and let's be off. We haven't got a page to lose. On, you husky! Avant, you husky!
Stop those charges. This must be the place, homeless. You see that sign? Mumsy's Ye Old Exotic Curio and PJ Proby Shoppy.
What have you got? This liter of PJ Probe wine, you know. This is a new with natural meat flavoring. You're the first sucker to buy it. That's 60.
This is my desk, and this is where I work. And I have iconic quotes all over the place here that mean a lot to me. There is from Michelangelo, trifles make perfection and perfection is no trifle. From Rimbaud, genius is the recovery of childhood at will. And Eleanor Roosevelt, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. Here is the quote that I sort of work by. It's from P.J. Proby, the rock singer, and it says, I am an artist and should be exempt from shit.
That's Luna Proby Shoppy, you fooly. Now let's get out of that and go in.
Good evening, gentlemen. Might I interest you in a genuine Abyssinian curd bowl?
That's beautiful. Could you gift rabbit?
No, I'm sorry, we're out of rabbits just now.
What did you say?
I won't repeat it.
Oh, not.
Nothing, nothing. How do you fancy this genuine 1884 fancy East Indian curry? Lord Kitchener brought it up continually during his last campaign.
Well, no, thank you. Actually, I am in the market for a lunar probe.
Oh, one moment, sir.
Sissy?
What is it, Ian?
It's the fuzz they're on to Daddy.
Oh, I knew this would happen. Well, gentlemen, you might as well know it all. Come back here in the storage room and we'll talk it over. Watch your head.
Why, I don't know what you're talking about, young lady. I haven't had a shot for hours.
Oh. Homeless, look at what a lot of hardware. What's that?
That's the Lunik 4.
And what's that?
The Assyria 2.
Look out, homeless. I say, what was that?
The Surveyor 15. It just took 8,000 photographs of your left foot. You'll have the prints in half an hour.
Actually, little lady, we're more interested in your father's prints.
Ha-ha! Ho-ho! Now, come. We didn't mean to make you cry, little lady. But we have every reason to believe that your father cupped the moon.
Oh, Ian, they know!
Quiet, sissy. Pull yourself together, girl.
That's much better. You were spreading out all over the room, most distasteful.
Ian, Ian will have to tell them.
Don't say a word until you speak to your lawyer.
But you are my lawyer.
Then let me give you a piece of advice.
Thank you. Would you, either of you gentlemen, like one?
Oh, no. No, thank you. Oh, thank you. I've just had a bit of a fright. Yes, you can put mine in a doggy bag for later. Now, let's get back to business. Anybody know where we were?
Page 24. On which I say, it all began 3 years ago when Daddy, who fancies himself, when no one is looking, something of an astronomer, turned his kaleidoscope on the moon and then for some strange reason became obsessed with that pale mistress of the sky.
I see.
He began stealing it in a small way, once a month. Oddly, no one seemed to notice. Then he became bolder and bolder.
Yes, I remember meeting him when I was a rock.
He kept it then for longer and longer periods of time. We never knew what he did with it. I warned him that people would begin to notice, but he took no heed. He
hasn't taken any since Mother got him off the stuff.
That reminds me, Beeson, it is time for my shot. Ha-ha, you blind fool, you missed again.
Yes, and look at the hole you've put in the back of the wall of the shop.
Oh, homeless, what's that voice?
Doctor, come here quickly and look through this hole. What do you see?
I see a large, white, pitted object.
Oh, Ian, he's discovered the large, white, pitted object in our backyard. Daddy will be furious.
Come, Datsun, let's get to the bottom of this.
Oh, homeless, do you realize what that large, white, pitted object is?
Yes, Jetsam. It's incredible. Do you realize that over 500,000 babies were born today all over the world with their sun in Sagittarius and their moon in Glasgow?
Close encounters of the third kind.
Of the third kind, yes.
How does it rate as a science fiction movie or a fantasy movie or a movie?
Well, it's a nice little 1950s flying saucer flick. Except it missed one. It doesn't have Klaatu Barada Nikto Gort. I missed that. It's the same story, man. It's the same story. It's this saucer comes down, and these wonderful mystical aliens are going to save us from self-destruction and give us the wisdom of the galaxy. It's all that good Jesus saves jive. You know, that's what it is.
Except that Jesus becomes a creatures from outer space?
Yeah, it's the same. See, they recycled the baby from 2001.
Yeah.
It amazes me and delights me, too, that invariably the people who were captured by saucers and taken away, right? And they come back and they give us the message. And the message is always the same one Moses got. You know, don't hit each other, be nice. You know. I like it when George Burns says it. I don't care that much when I hear it from strange little creatures who look like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
You are not a fan of the most discussed movie of 1978.
No, I don't dislike it quite as much as Star Wars, which is The Pits. Would you like me to attack any other of your sacred cows? There are several things in both these movies that distress the hell out of me. And one of them is the spread of illogic and irrationality in our time. The first thing anybody says to you in a singles bar is, what's your sign? You know, I mean, they're in it. And everybody believes in crazed assassination conspiracies, and they believe in Bermuda Triangles and Scientology and all of that stuff that's just not real. And flying saucers is another one.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync.
And think that you're out of your mind.
This weekend at the Memorial Armory, Bear Whiz Beer is proud to present
the Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo.
It's a new age festival of ignorance.
It's a hopeful feast of mindless fellowship.
This weekend
at the Memorial Armory.
The Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo.
Crop circles.
Strange holes in the ground.
Things that aren't even there.
People watching you.
Voices only you can hear.
Hopes.
Fears.
Imaginings.
The Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo is a whole Slaffer Enterprises production.
Plus, Ginzu Pyramid Slicing Knife free.
So sharp, it cuts itself.
And it seems to me that the more movies you put out and the more books you put out that say we are such puny, miserable, wretched little creatures who cannot solve our problems, we need an intergalactic Ralph Nader to come and save our asses, it seems to me makes people feel a lot less than what they can be. You're laughing. Don't laugh.
One of the reasons I'm laughing is because you are, as always, a constantly amusing talker. The other is that I'm thinking that I'm hearing a denunciation of the whole art of fantasy writing, because I know you do not like the word science fiction.
But not so, mon frere. That's not the case at all. Fantasy, as opposed to space opera, which is what Star Wars is, and Close Encounters slightly less, but fantasy is something that should ideally serve to illuminate the human condition. You take a contemporary problem, alienation, paranoia, whatever, and by reflecting it in the mirror of fantasy, you say allegorically, here's what's really happening. Look at it. Look at it from a different view. Wake up. Be alert. That's what fantasy does. That's what it's always done. It's the oldest form of writing in the world. I mean, the Legend of Gilgamesh is the first writing we ever found, Sumerian, I believe, and that was a fantasy. But these kind of films do not do that. It seems to me that they distance people from the real world. Am I going too fast for you?
No, because I'm sitting here thinking that we were talking during a commercial break, and Lorraine Newman said that you really liked Close Encounters a great deal.
I love Close Encounters, and I'd like to know where you got the implication that the aliens came as judgmental saviors to show the humans the error of their ways. I never got that from the movie. I thought it was totally objective in that sense, and that it was really a conveyance of ideas, you know, and that the joy of their final communication through music, of all things, was such a strong emotional thing to convey, you know, and actually made me cry, you know.
God, Lorraine, I just don't even know how to respond to that. But then you see, I'm the kind of guy who laughed when Bambi's mother got it. Let me put it this way. When I see a film in which there is a messianic halo around the aliens emerging, you know, and a child shall lead them, all of these interesting biblical and Judeo-Christian undertones, which are there. I mean, they're all subtext, and people get fed them without really realizing it. I mean, here is this child who is the one, you know, he goes out, and he's the one who gets taken by them because he's a child. A child shall lead us. And here come the aliens, and what do they do when they come here? Do they exchange wisdom with us? Do they do any? No, they go and they capture Ambrose Bierce in Mexico and a couple of people out of the Bermuda Triangle and schlep them off God knows where. And
yeah, but they do exchange knowledge. That's the whole thing. And the child was, that was part of, it was like a foreign exchange thing. I mean,
they sent back a bunch of lobotomized pilots and that was their exchange?
Well, you would appear pretty lobotomized if you had all of a sudden appeared another decade. You know, all of a sudden it was World War II, and hey, that's a strange-looking tie you got on. I've never seen a tie like that.
Well,
you know?
What were they doing on the ship? I mean, with all those years, were they?
Well, look, there were people from the medieval times. You know, I mean, it wasn't only children who were on.
Yeah, but they hadn't aged. What did they do? Freeze them in a cryogenic crypt or something?
Hey, I don't know what they got up there, you know. I mean, I don't know how they managed to not age the people.
I have a little difficulty figuring out what we got on down here.
Why is it so important to take that movie and look at it for the symbolism and the meaning and the allegory and everything? Why
don't we just
say it's a hell of a nice story and I had a good time.
We need entertainment.
Yeah.
We need to get away.
Well, what is wrong with that?
Okay, I'll tell you what's wrong with that. See, I'm not a...
Am I going too fast?
No, you're going just right. See, I tend to be a very happy-go-lucky schlub, and I don't really like to think negative thoughts. I mean, I go to see Oh God, and I laugh my tuchus off. I mean, I really enjoyed that film. I saw it four times, okay?
Okay.
didn't care for that one.
No.
How about Bambi? Get behind Bambi? I see something very, very sad going on in the world as a whole. And what it is we talk about, well, we really need some entertainment. You know, you come home, you turn on the tube, and there's a documentary on rape. Oh, wow, can't handle that, man. You're trying to rerun a Gilligan's Island. And everybody is constantly doing that. Now, I need a little relaxation. We spend 90% of our day in an incredible lemming-like pursuit of entertainment, whether it's the tube, or it's silly movies, or it's cheap novels, or it's fast sex, or it's booze, or dope, or religion, whatever it is. We're constantly escaping. We're constantly running away. God forbid we should deal with the real world as it is perceived. Okay? That seems to me to be a frightening thing. We live in incredibly complex times. The information load that is put on us daily is amazing. And yet everybody distanced themselves. Everybody is put back one remove. And then they can't understand why they go crazy. They can't understand why they can't cope.
Because you're turning the whole thing, or the whole consumption of anything from television, movies, books, or whatever, into an either-or.
No,
thing.
I'm saying...
Sure you are. You're saying that you can't read the Globe and Mail or the Vancouver Sun or whatever. You can't look at television documentaries and heavy things and think heavy thoughts and look at documentaries on rape and worry about that and get all upset about that, and then go home and watch a piece of junk on television or
I'm not
or
saying that at all. I didn't
read
think
a nice Harlan Ellison novel or something just to maybe to get away from it for a little while. You cannot stand there. You're going to go crazy if you're under a constant.
That's the point. Everybody is getting constantly away from it constantly getting away from it.
But it's not either or. You can take all the heavy stuff, and from time to time you need a little leaven.
Sure, if people do and would take the heavy stuff, but they don't. They don't. I mean, the evidence is, you know, it doesn't come out of my mouth. There are studies on alienation, on disorientation of people that is incredible. They say to us that we are becoming more and more distanced from one another every year. It's what they call an asymptotic curve. It goes up and up. And so we spend our time constantly trying to get away and escape. That's the fact.
But it's still it's a necessary element of life, and you're one of the perpetrators of
there's nothing relaxing about my stories. Nothing at all. You don't get any reassurance from my stories at all.
You may not get any reassurance from it, but you sometimes have a great deal of fun.
Occasionally, yeah. I'm not against fun. I resent the fact that the word entertainment, which meant gathering together originally, has been changed to be synonymous with mindless. Entertainment now can only be a Harold Robbins novel, can only be a film like Star Wars. It can't be reading Kafka. It can't be Shakespeare. Who says? They say, the ones who watch Starsky and Hutch. That ain't entertainment anymore.
But it's I watch Starsky and Hutch. Got a nice Polish boy in it. But if I watch Starsky and Hutch, it doesn't mean that afterwards I can't go and read Kafka, if you will. Well, I don't see why
you lead me to an elitist statement.
You are an elitist.
Bet your sweet ass. Most of the people who sit and watch the tube for 6, 7, 8 hours a day would much rather watch Starsky and Hutch than they would Shakespeare. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily good or bad for those people. I just think
But you are, Harlan. You're saying it's
you
bad.
You might have found the rest of that sentence interesting.
I will get to hear it, I am certain.
Nah, forget it. I'm going to keep that one for myself.
Oh, yeah? Keep going.
You asked me what I thought of the silly movie, I told you. Down comes a big galactic chandelier. Right? And a lot of people look at it, and out comes, you know, the Pillsbury Doughboy, and he says, and he takes him away. I saw that in 1950. It was terrific. They do it with more skill now. Steve Spielberg's a nice man. Ricky Dreyfuss is an old friend of mine. I think he's a fabulous actor. I wish the film didn't say some of the things it says any more than I wish Star Wars said some of the things it says.
What about Star Trek, with which you were involved? Whatever it is. Why do you deny Star Trek?
What do you mean, deny? What is it, my lord? I'm denying my... Jeez, man, I wrote one lousy segment. Give me a break. Doesn't the statute of limitations run out?
You only wrote one segment
one,
of Star
one, Trek? A singular, one. Oh, Jesus. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Outpatient Clinic of the Menninger Foundation.
Are you sorry?
Am I sorry I wrote the Star Trek?
Yeah.
No, I'm not sorry I ever wrote anything I wrote. I did it with clean hands and composure. I'm sorry the way they did it. I mean, they butchered it, and that's, you know, the fact that I won, you know, a writing award for the original script version leads me to believe that I knew what I was doing.
Hey, you! Get your filthy hands off me moon! You smudge it!
Just a second, old man. What do you mean, your moon? The moon belongs to everyone!
The best things in life!
So you sing. But what do they do? Do they look at it? Do they make love under it? Do they write songs about it? No. They hurl dirty great machines at it. That's what they do. They come down in a whoosh of flame, scorching its tender skin, wounding it, and wreaking havoc in the sea of tranquility. Then they stripe at it and make it bleed, and then they take pictures of the carnage they have done. Well, it's all in the past now, because I'm taking good care of it, me.
Sir, in the name of the Queen, I must ask you to return the moon to its rightful place in the heavens.
Did you say the Queen?
Did I say the what?
The Queen.
Oh, yes, I did. Oh, you just said it too.
Oh.
The Queen.
Get on with it,
Father.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
In that case, as a gentleman, I can only comply. However, there is one condition.
What is that, old man?
That I be allowed to go along with it, to protect it from the madness of this world.
But, Daddy, how will you live?
Unpretentiously. Goodbye, children.
Goodbye, Daddy.
Well, well, homeless. Another case has been solved by your brilliant... Homeless? Homeless lad, where are you?
I'm off with the moon, Doctor.
But why?
Because I'm going to solve the greatest case of my career. The mystery of the universe. Oh, sweet mystery of life, at last I found you.
Oh, and so, Homeless had solved the mystery of the missing moon. Only, and loudly to embark on an even greater quest. I did not know if I would ever see my friend again. And I didn't much care. Because I still had, as a memory, 8,000 8x10 glossies of his left foot. So, I returned to Bakersfield Street to finish off the rest of me days, bored to tears with cleaning up after the giant rat of Sumatra. Which occasionally reminded me very little of the time when, on the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day, I was out chopping cotton and Homeless was baling hay.
The Firesign Theater has just presented By the Light of the Silvery. Any similarity to persons or planets, living or dead, is a stroke of purely accidental genius. Aha, here we are, bottom of page 27.
Good night, folks!